Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Wild Hour. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service to the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Is Your Retirement at Risk? When we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed the scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But back in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation, and in place of these just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? If you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my business school conducted here at the law school in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, have you thought much about your retirement? How about your pension program or your pension plan? Has it been turned over to the government like United Airlines, Delta, and Northwest is in the process of doing now after filing for bankruptcy? And how about General Motors and Delphi or Delphi? Americans and their enchantment with retirement are in for a rude awakening as the years progress. The retirement system that we have looked forward to all of our lives is coming unraveled here in the 21st century. And the pension program that we have become so enamored with and dependent upon and looking forward to is going to be a will-of-the-wisp, as our chancellor, our great Alan Greenspan, the chairman of the Federal Reserve System, described the stock market back in 1996. He used the terms exuberance. Exuberance. He said, "Americans are a little bit overly exuberant in this stock market, and they're probably going to be in for a surprise." It was a $7 trillion surprise when all of the dust had cleared and the smoke blew away. Americans lost $7 trillion in the stock market. Americans are going to lose more than $7 trillion in the pension programs. Now, today, the economy is robust. Well, that's what they keep telling me on the Lair News Hour, and that's what I see on MSNBC and the CBS Evening News. Unemployment is at 5%. Nothing to be concerned about there. Inflation is 4.3%, they tell us. Nothing to be overly concerned about there. The economy is growing at the rate of 3.4% per year. That's exciting. Housing prices are strong nationwide. The stock market is over 10,000 and has been for a year or two. I'm working and everything seems to be okay. So what's the problem? Well, Bill Bonner of the Daily Reckoning and Franklin Sanders of the Money Changer and Richard Doty of the Mogambo Guru, Bill Buckler of the Privateer, Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster, Jim Jubeck of Jubeck's Journal, Liz Pullman Weston of MSN, I guess it is Money, John Malden of the China Syndrome, and Jim Puplava of the FinancialSense.com all take a contrarian view of what's going on around us and what's being reported to us day in and day out. An article appeared in the Reader's Digest in February of 2005. Now, that's February of this year as I speak. And it's entitled, Whatever Happened to the Golden Years? The Golden Years. The years where we look forward to working for General Motors or IBM or some big multinational corporation for 30 years and then retire. We're going to retire for the rest of our lives. We're going to work for 30 years, just like we do when we go into the military services. And people join the military and they serve for 20 or 30 years, or they go into Congress and they serve for a number of years and they come out and they've got a retirement, they've got a pension. And people have looked forward to this pension program over the last 50 or 60 years. I mean, people are dependent upon this program, the pension program. Is it going to be there when you retire? Well, one family wonders. When the weather's good, L. Beltram heads to the golf course near his Colorado home almost every day. Most of the time, though, he isn't there to play a round of golf. Instead, the 59-year-old retiree is scheduling tee times for others. He's washing golf carts and manning the counter in the pro shop. The $7.50-an-hour job has some perks, though. As an employee, Beltram gets to golf for free, a $45 savings every time he hits the links. Still, it's a job. And after 31 years of working at one company to earn what he thought would be a comfortable retirement, he never expected to be punching a time clock. And it isn't what Sherry Beltram, 57, envisioned either. It is so disappointing that he even had to consider going back to work, she says. Unfortunately, neither she nor Ed saw any choice. Not after his 401k lost $250,000 in what felt like a flash, and the company that he had worked for almost all of his adult life suddenly stopped subsidizing the couple's health insurance premiums. Now, two-thirds of people worry about having enough money for retirement. Two-thirds, that's two people out of every three. I'm happy to report to you, however, that I'm that one person out of three that is not concerned about his retirement at all. I'll tell you why as we progress. But it seems everywhere that she looks, Sherry Beltram, without an income or pension of her own, and still several years away from tapping Social Security, runs up against a daunting new reality. Her husband washing golf carts instead of driving them. Her 81-year-old father watching his employer of 43 years drop the death benefit that was to help support his wife if he left her a widow. Her 33-year-old son moving from job to job over the first 10 years of his career in the high-tech sector, unable to save a dime. For millions of current retirees, and for the 78 million baby boomers who will eventually stop working, retirement has become almost a fantasy, not a life stage that you plan for. One example, more and more private companies can no longer meet their obligations to those aging out of the workforce. In 2003, 155 underfunded private pension plans were taken over by the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. It's called the PBGC Corporation. In 2004, that number rose to 192. The surge is threatening the safety net for those who thought that they had rock-solid benefits coming, for those who've never had traditional pensions to count on, shrinking 401ks, and the issue of Social Security's long-term solvency make for an even bleaker outlook. We worry about my parents, and we worry about our children, Sherry Beltram says. Will we be able to help them out if they need it? Well, Ed Beltram still draws a decent monthly pension, but he and other retirees have begun to question just how much security they've got and why not. They've seen the foundation that they thought that they had built up for their later years being chipped away. And they worry about Social Security's prospects, and they feel betrayed by changes to the retiree health care coverage program. They fear ex-employers may go bankrupt or merge with less friendly companies, putting their pensions at risk. And they read about new accounting rules that could make it harder for companies to meet their pension obligations in the future. And they worry that the PBGC may not be able to keep up with the demand. Well, 3 years ago, Ed Beltram retired from Lucent Technologies, a communications company spun off from AT&T back in 1996. Beltram had been with AT&T and Lucent nearly all of his entire career, mostly in Oklahoma City, as a human resources manager in a factory making telecommunications switching gear. In its first years, Lucent was a Wall Street darling. Its stock kept climbing, making plenty of investors rich and fattening the 401ks of many employees, Beltram included. By 1998, he and his wife, reassured by their healthy nest egg, took the first steps in their retirement plan. They'd always dreamed of living in the mountains, so Beltram took a job in Lucent's Denver office, and the couple built a home in Woodland Park, about 25 miles from Colorado Springs. The three-bedroom ranch house sits high in the hills, surrounded by pine trees, with a view of Pikes Peak.
The $650 mortgage payment is a lot more than the $151 that they had been paying on their Oklahoma City house, but between the pension they'd be receiving and their 401k savings, they didn't think that they'd be stretched too thin. Then the bubble burst. Between 1999 and 2002, the per share price of Lucent stock plummeted from more than $64 a share to just 58 cents a share. Beltram, whose 401k was heavily invested in company stock, estimates his losses at $250,000. By 2001, the company was trying to cut costs by offering attractive early retirement packages to employees. Beltram took advantage of an offer and added 5 years of service to his pension calculation, boosting his monthly benefit check to $4,467 a month. As an extra sweetener, the company agreed to cover 90% of health insurance costs for those who retired early and their spouses, but only half for those who continued working, and the Beltrams decided that the offer was too good to ignore. The main incentive was health care benefits, Beltram says, and we'd seen how health care costs were rising and we wanted to be protected. So after Beltram retired, the couple got more bad news. Lucent Technology then eliminated the health insurance subsidy for spouses, and the Beltrams' monthly premiums rose from $42 in 2001 to $516 in 2004. This extra $5,688 a year doesn't mean the Beltrams can't keep a roof over their heads, but it leaves them with less discretionary cash in their budget, and Beltram's job at the golf course helps fill in some of the gaps. Sherry Beltram's father, Bob Rockell, is in a tougher spot than her husband. In 1989, Rockell retired from his job as a shop floor supervisor at the same Oklahoma City plant where Ed worked. He'd been there for 43 years. One morning a few years ago, he and his wife, Betty Ann, were sitting around the kitchen table going through the mail. Betty Ann opened an envelope from Lucent, and inside was a notice informing the couple that the company was ending its death benefit. That's an amount equal to a retiree's annual salary at retirement and payable to the spouse if the retiree died first. Just like that, the Rockells had lost $52,000. They left us high and dry, says Rockell, adding that if he'd known earlier that Lucent would yank the benefit, he would have bought a life insurance policy. But now he says that he and his wife are too old for an affordable policy and too old to go back to work. I don't think anybody wants a 79-year-old man working, adds Betty Ann, who was employed as an administrative secretary for 10 years when her children were in college, and she draws her own small pension, so they carry on, minding expenses and hoping for the best. But Betty Ann says that they're scared. In the back of your mind, you're always wondering what's next. If they can do this, what else can they do? Lucent spokeswoman Mary Ward confirms that the company has stopped subsidizing health care coverage for some retiree spouses, calling it just one of many very tough choices. We had to make some very difficult but unfortunately necessary decisions to remain a competitive player in the telecom industry, she says, adding that the rising cost of health care is a national issue, not one confined just to Lucent Technologies. There was similar reluctance to dropping the death benefit for supervisory employees like Rockell, adds Ward, yet providing a death benefit is unusual, and most companies long ago eliminated death benefits from their retirement programs. Having enough money saved for retirement is a worry for 73% of those that are aged 30 to 49. Now, did you get that? Nearly three-quarters of all of you people out there are worried about, that is, if you're from 30 to age 49, you're worried about, will you have enough money saved for your retirement? I'm happy to report to you boys and girls that I'm one of those 25% that's not worried about my retirement. I wasn't worried about it when I was age 30 to age 49, and now that I'm past the retirement age, I'm not concerned about it in the slightest, and I'm going to tell you why as we progress along. Now, while they don't have concrete reason to worry, seeing their other benefits managed as the Beltrams and Rockells questioning how solid their Lucent pensions are, given the steady increase in companies defaulting on pension obligations, and with the PBGC posting a record deficit last year, their anxiety is understandable. The agency isn't in immediate danger of defaulting on pension payments that it must cover, but some watchdogs argue that it must increase the amount that it charges employers to guarantee their pensions or face trouble. Now, against this backdrop, many retirees have banded together to try to protect their interests. And as the communications director for the Lucent Retirees Organization, for instance, Ed Beltram, writes members of Congress about the health benefit changes, and he has lobbied Lucent so far unsuccessfully to audit its pension trust fund to reassure the skeptics among its 125,000 retirees. Now, Bob Rockell attends monthly meetings of a group of Oklahoma City Lucent retirees called the Telephone Pioneers and is considering joining one of three pending federal lawsuits aimed at restoring the death benefit. As for the younger generations, the Beltrams' 33-year-old son Dustin has no pension to protect. A designer of interactive software for a company in San Jose, California, He's worked for a half a dozen companies since graduating from college. Now, only one offered a pension plan. The others had 401ks. Then, hampered by waiting periods and vesting schedules, Dustin had saved just $1,200 in a retirement account over 10 years. And then, he had to cash that in for an urgent car repair. Even if the plans had made it easier to save, Dustin says he couldn't anyway. He and his wife, Bridget Dolan, laid off from her job as a web designer last winter, expected their first child in March. They're trying to pay down high-interest credit card debt and start a college fund for the baby. To reduce expenses, they sold their house in November and they moved into a rental. Ed and Sherry Beltram worried about Dustin and his brother Cody, age 30. Knowing their children haven't been able to put money aside, in 2001, the Beltrams bought a life insurance policy that will pay the boys a combined $1.5 million when Ed and Sherry die. The annual premium, $21,000 a year. Now, to afford this and other expenses, the Beltrams budget very carefully. They used to love going out to dinner, but when Ed turned 59 last fall, they celebrated with lunch instead at the Cliff House, a four-star inn and restaurant in nearby Manitou Springs. Lunchtime entrees were about half the price of dinner. Now, they need a new car, but they can't afford one right now. And we were hoping for retirement to be a time of comfort and ease, says Sherry, not to live high, but not to have to worry about what would happen next month or next year. Worry is the rule in the Beltram family. When it comes to his retirement, Dustin knows that he's on his own. I don't really expect Social Security to be there, he says, and especially after seeing what happened to my dad. I know I can't count on a company to take care of us. Once the baby is born and the family pays off some of their debt, Dustin hopes to come up with a retirement strategy. For now, his plan is simple. I'm basically expecting to work until the day I die. Reader's Digest, February 2005. Is your pension plan safe? As I pointed out when we began, it seems like the economy is robust. Unemployment is only 5%. Inflation is a paltry 4.3%. In most people's minds, that's nothing grievous. The economy is growing at 3.4%. Housing prices are strong nationwide. The stock market is over 10,000, pushing 11,000. I'm working. Everything seems to be okay to me. What's the problem? What's the problem? Nearly three-quarters of people aged 30 to 49 are worried about their retirement, and those that are retired are worried about, is it going to continue or is it going to end? Now, the United Airlines employees just found out those retirement funds were turned over to the government, and now they're going to get about half, about 50%. Is the economy really as strong and as robust as we're being told? Is the world economy, for that matter, as strong and robust as we're being led to believe? And we read numbers that the Chinese economy is growing at 7% a year. The Japanese economy is coming out of the doldrums. And we read these numbers or we see these reports on television. And they seem to tell us that, my God, everything is going great. But if everything is going so great, then why does Delphi go bankrupt? Why does United Airlines and Delta and Northwest go into bankruptcy? What's going on here, boys and girls? Is there something going on behind the scenes that we're not looking at, that we're unable to see? Well, I would contend that the answer to that is yes. Yes, it is. Now, let me give you some reports that maybe you have not seen. Some reports from Bill Bonner, Franklin Sanders, Richard Doughty, Bill Buckler, Bob Chapman, Jim Juback, Liz Pullman, John Moulton, Jim Puplava. I gave you the Reader's Digest report. Reader's Digest, boys and girls, is just about as mainstream American press as you can get. I mean, that's an apple pie. You just can't beat Reader's Digest. And they just reported that, wait a minute, your security and your pension program might not be as good as you thought it was. I'm here to tell you, boys and girls, that every pension program in America is either upside down today or is going upside down in the near future. So if you're planning on retirement, you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy. And these people today, with their $4,000 a month, should be preparing for the eventual bust, which is certain to come. Now, let's spend this series of programs on the world economy, not just the American economy, but let's take a look at the whole world, of which America represents 20% of the world economy. We're one of the smallest countries in the world, population-wise. I mean, we only have 300 million people in this country. There are several countries in the world that have larger populations than the United States, you know, such as Russia, China, Indonesia, India. And those countries combined don't represent the gross domestic product that the United States of America does. Combined. And all of the world combined represents 100% of the pie, and America represents one-fifth of that pie. If the American economy falters, the entire world economy will falter right behind it. right behind it. And what we're facing here is not just a recession in America, but it is a fundamental change in the entire economic structure of the world. That's what we're on the verge of seeing. And Ed Beltram here doesn't have a clue as to what's coming or how he's going to cope with it. Actually, Ed is in Fat City today. But he's headed toward the same position that the Argentines went through in 2001, in the same position that everybody in the world is about to go through, the Argentine experience, and the Argentines will be going through it a second time. The time to prepare was 30 years ago. If you didn't start your preparations 30 years ago, you're probably too little too late. You needed to start your preparations at least 5 years ago if you just wanted to survive the program. If you didn't start your preparations 5 years ago, you're probably too little too late. I mean, that's just where reality's at. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's another 5 years left. Maybe the economy will continue muddling along, and maybe you can make some preparations over the next 4 or 5 years. I don't know. I'm not a prophet. God doesn't talk to me. I don't get messages from heaven. But there is a book called the Bible that does give us a pretty accurate forecast of what's coming in the future. Not a very good forecast. I say it's an accurate forecast, but it's not a good one. It's not something that you'd want to wake up to in the morning and say, boy, I just can't wait until I see this program put into effect. You can read about it, though, in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, and it's aimed directly at the United States and Canada, directly at us, along with Australia, New Zealand, and Western Europe. We're the people called the Anglo-Saxons. We're the people who are about to get our comeuppance. So if you're a Muslim or a Japanese or a Chinese, and you've been chafing, and you've been concerned about, and you've just been, you know, biting the bullet over the Americans and the Canadians and the Europeans taking advantage of you over the last 200 years, sit back and relax. The day of reckoning is just about to occur. Now, Bill Bonner writes a column, he writes a newsletter called The Daily Reckoning. Bill Bonner and The Daily Reckoning. And there's another guy by the name of Jim Puplava, spelled P-U-P-L-A-V-A. I'm going to start with the Jim Puplava story or the article, and then we'll take a look at Bill Bonner, who just wrote a book here with another guy recently over the economy. Now let's take a look and see, is there something that we could do or can be doing to alleviate the shock of losing our pensions and what we are, what we think we are, what we believe we are entitled to in our future retirement when we come back right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org on the webpage, or 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the economy. Is your retirement at risk? Americans believe in retirement, and Americans believe that their retirement is a sacred obligation of their employers. The institution that began this retirement program was the United States Army, and if you served 20 years in the Army, you'd get a pension for the rest of your life. Then business started offering retirement programs for executives that worked for corporations for long periods of time. And so that got to be pretty interesting. And as time progressed along, the labor unions got into the act and said, hey, listen, we got to have some kind of retirement program in the benefit package. And so over the years, we now have retirement as an expectation, as a part of life. We Americans work for a company, and we expect to retire. We have Social Security. Now, when Social Security was created, it was not created as a retirement program, although it's a part of the retirement package that we all prepare for in our lifetimes. But we expect to work for Lucent Technologies. We expect to have a 401k or a Krogh plan. We expect our company to provide a pension program. We expect our military retirement. And if we're working for the government in any capacity, we expect a government retirement program. It's just the American way. It's the way life is. Hasn't it always been this way? Well, the answer is no, it has not always been this way, boys and girls. Moses lived to be 120 years old and was working the day he died. My granddad, Abe Snyder, died in 1947. He never drew a Social Security check. He never paid into the program. He never got a Social Security number. He died at age 92. He was a wealthy man. Now, he came out west in the 1870s in a covered wagon, but by 1947, he had earned enough to take care of himself in his old age. Americans used to take care of themselves. Somewhere along the line, we got the idea that the government should take care of us, or the company should take care of us, or Social Security, or, when we get old and full of years. In fact, not only should they take care of us, but they should take care of us in a style that we desire to become accustomed to. Now, a man making $4,700 a month, isn't that what Ed was making here? It was $4,000 a month. Let me just multiply that out for you, boys and girls. $4,000 a month times 12 months a year is $48,000 a year. This man that's being featured in the Reader's Digest, and by the way, if you'd like to read that story, it's in the February 2005 Reader's Digest. And the story, it was on page 150-something rather here. Let me look it up, and I'll give you the title to it again. Come on, Georgie, pension primer. The golden years. Whatever happened to the golden years? One family wonders. Do you know what the median average income in the United States is? Well, it's $41,000. That means that half the people in this country earn over $41,000, and half the people in this country earn under $41,000. So you people that are out there working today, driving, whether you're driving truck or waiting table or whatever you're doing, if you're making under $41,000 a year, you're in one half of the American population. Every other person is in the same boat you're in. If you're making over $41,000 a year, you're in the top half. That's in the top 50%. And Ed Beltram is in the top 50%, and he's drawn a retirement check. Retirement check. Plus a $7.50 an hour. So I think Ed's doing pretty well for himself. He's making more than the median average. That doesn't seem to be too bad to me or too poor. And he's able to buy a $21,000 a year policy, insurance policy, for his two children, which will pay them $1.5 million. Could it be that Alan Greenspan's statement recently to Congress, that Congress and government in general has promised more, has created an expectation that it cannot fulfill? Well, boys and girls, that's precisely the case. That your expectations are greater than the government can fulfill, your expectations are greater than the company that you work for can fulfill, and your expectations are greater than you can fulfill. The three of you together, government and your company and you working, will be unable to fulfill those expectations. Now, you're probably a baby boomer, and you probably have these great expectations of life and leisure, driving around the country in your Winnebago for the rest of your life, 20 or 30 years, while somebody else supports you. And that's a wonderful dream. A wonderful dream. I think everybody should have that dream. But it's a dream that not everybody can have. Some people can have it, and some people can't. It's like going into the casino. And we have this great dream that we're going to hit the jackpot and score $1 million on the keno game. It's a wonderful expectation. And everybody in the casino should have that expectation. But only a very few people are actually going to collect that $1 million. Or that magical lottery of $200 million. It is true that one person is going to collect on that lottery, but it probably isn't going to be you. Somebody's going to collect it, but it's probably not going to be you. And it's an expectation, it's a dream, it's a vision, it's a fantasy that everybody loves, but it cannot be fulfilled. And unfortunately, too many people have staked their future on this fantasy, as opposed to staking their future on reality. Now, I'm not here to rain on your parade or to prick your balloon, you know. I just want to point out to you that it could well be that there's greater problems in the offing over here than your retirement. I think your retirement is probably the least of your concerns or worries, boys and girls. Life and death, I think, are greater concerns. And I think that we're facing a life or death struggle over the next 10 or 20 years. I mean, life or death struggle. So let's get into the first article here from Financial Sense Online. I want to share this with you because most of what I'm going to tell you here, what I'm going to share with you, is free. You don't have to subscribe or pay a subscription fee. Some of them you do, but most of them you don't. You can get this information that I'm going to share with you right now free of charge. This came free. It comes from www.financialsense.com. The guy's name is Jim Puplava, P-U-P-L-A-V-A. He's an economist. He makes his money buying, selling, and trading stocks and bonds and negotiable instruments and futures and all kinds of things like that. And I'm sure that he publishes a newsletter that you have to pay for, and he probably has a lot of subscribers and a lot of people that are interested in retirement and that are interested in making money without working. And most of us want to do that. Most of us want to make money without working. And we see companies, you know, like Disney paying their chief executive officer. I think the one of them that I saw here got a package of around, was it $200 million? I think it was some kind of an outlandish number of dollars, and I think it was around $200 million. And so the guy working at Lucent Technologies, you know, he's working out here for wages, you know, he's a working stiff, and he says, that's not fair, that's not right. I think it is. I think it's fair, and I think it's right, and I'll tell you why I think so. When you look at the chief executive officer of, like, Jack Welch at General Electric, you see, those guys get paid for their performance. They don't get paid $5 an hour for standing around at the water cooler pinching the girls on the butt. They get paid for performance. I remember when I was a kid, I used to haul hay for a nickel a bale. Most people wanted to get paid $2 an hour. I didn't want $2 an hour. I wanted 5 cents a bale for every bale I put in the barn. And a guy working for $2 an hour, working 8 hours a day, could make $16 hauling hay out of Frank Roach's field. I could contract with Frank to put the hay in the barn for a nickel a bale and make $25 a day between Milken's and still make my $6 a day at $2.50 a month in board room. Yes, sir, boys and girls, I could make one-third more money, but I got paid for the number of bales I put in the barn, not the number of hours that I spent out in the field. And chief executive officers and people who are entrepreneurs get paid for the amount of hay they put in the barn, not for the amount of hours they put in on the job. And that's the difference. So if you want to get paid for what you do, you should get paid a lot more. The security blanket that people have become accustomed to is an outgrowth of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. It's an outgrowth of unions and unionization. And hey, their expectations are marvelous. I don't begrudge anybody an expectation, a dream, a fantasy. But boys and girls, reality is how many bales did you put in the barn today? Not how many hours you spent in the field or how many gallons of sweat poured off of your body. And that's what results are all about. And people who are entrepreneurs, people who are real producers, do a lot better in life than people that have visions, dreams, and fantasies. I think that visions, dreams, and fantasies are going to add up to a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. Jim Puplava, listen to this. He says, I began this update in the cabin of an MD-80 en route to Seattle from San Diego. It was a clear day as we departed out of Lindbergh Field. Our plane took off toward the ocean. It banked to the right and headed north. And I saw a vast patchwork of homes and highways that defined the Southern California coastline, the coastline as it appeared from the air. It looked like one continuous city. And as we moved further inland and ascended to our final cruising altitude of 31,000 feet, the patchwork of homes and roads were replaced by the green quilt of the San Joaquin Valley. The San Joaquin Valley has been called the world's richest agricultural valley, a technological miracle made possible through energy. Fertilizers made from fossil fuels enrich the cotton fields, vineyards, orange groves, and various crops that are produced from this region. Energy powers the John Deere harvesters and the J.I. Case tractors that enable farmers to handle increased crop yields, while diesel fuel powers the big rigs that bring the crops to market. Energy also powers the air conditioners that make the valley's summer heat more palatable. The Kern County oil fields stand out as a reminder that this robust agricultural and urban region rests on a platform of cheap energy and abundant water. The San Joaquin Valley is looked upon as a symbol of success. It's a melding of modern capitalism and ingenuity that has produced an agricultural miracle. The region's abundant crop output is dependent upon mechanization, which in turn is dependent upon cheap fossil fuels. But this success is overshadowed by enormous environmental problems that increasingly confront our 21st century world. Cheap energy, water scarcity, soil erosion, and land becoming too compacted and salty for farming, and fertile soils plowed over by asphalt point to a clash between nature and urbanization. The San Joaquin Valley needs energy and water, and without these two natural resources, the miracles of the valley disappear. Energy has become more expensive, from the fertilizers that are made from oil to the diesel fuel that powers the tractors and the semis that move the crops to market. In some areas of the valley, pinched Kern County farmers are considering selling a part of their water allocations to the state's thirsty metropolitan districts. It may become more profitable to sell the water than to sell the farm crops. California's cities keep growing in size and more homes and freeways are being built, which means more water and energy will be needed in a state that contains over 11% of the nation's population. The San Joaquin Valley not only produces the crops that Californians consume, but a large part of its surplus also feeds other western states and foreign countries. The clash of two worlds. The problems that confront the San Joaquin Valley are the same problems that confront other agricultural regions around the world. Water and energy are moving to center stage and are likely to remain there for the balance of this century. It is a clash between nature and urbanization, and it is about to unfold before our very eyes. At stake is an industrialized world dependent upon growth to support its rising debt levels and an emerging world hell-bent on industrializing. Both worlds require energy. Both worlds require water and food to support a population base that has grown from 3.5 billion to today's 6.5 billion in just 30 years. The growing water needs. Well, the issue of water isn't front page news, as is energy. It soon will be. You see, the western states from Arizona, California, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming are preparing for the possibility of water shortages for the first time since Hoover Dam was built in 1930. The drought that has permeated the region is now entering its sixth year. Lake Powell has lost nearly 60% of its water, and if water levels continue to fall, the lake will be unable to generate electricity by the year 2007. In nearby Las Vegas, the regional water agency is removing the equivalent of whole football fields of grass from playgrounds, golf courses, and lawns in order to conserve water. In California, the high Sierra snowpack is melting faster and earlier than during any springtime in the past 80 years. In Colorado, dropping reservoirs are restricting water use to 1.2 million Denver residents who are now restricted to watering their lawns only twice a week. In the Jefferson River Basin, Montana's beef basket, it is reeling from the high cost of water and its limited availability. It has impacted the region's commerce from the local ranchers to the supermarkets and restaurants. In the words of Dennis Moitke, who oversees the water allocation for the region, he said, a lot of ranchers over the past several years sank everything they had in irrigating their pastures. But if they don't have water, it's like trying to run a bank without money. The Clark Canyon Reservoir, which provides water to that region, has been reduced to 36% capacity as a result of this drought. Not since the Dust Bowl of the 1930s has the West seen anything like this epic drought that it now faces. This water issue isn't local or regional. The issue has become global as a growing population worldwide and concomitant urbanization puts increasing demands on the Earth's resources. Now, the ignored bull market in commodities. The booming commodities bull market is every bit as much the result of growing world population as it is to neglect and underinvestment. It's a classic case of supply and demand. While investors and fund managers seem fixated on the equities markets, there is a roaring bull market in commodities which has passed and left the equities markets behind. And throughout the 1990s, money poured into technology stocks. The brick and mortar companies were basically ignored. Very little capital flowed into mining, agriculture, or forestry. The commodity sector has been starved for capital for more than 10 years. Lower prices led to capital outflows and investments everywhere else. While commodity investments lacked capital, the world economy began to grow as never before, thanks to the triumph of capitalism around the world, especially in China. Demand soared as supplies shrank. Deficits were made up from surplus inventories accumulated over decades of time. Eventually, demand exceeded supply, and now the available resources. So prices have risen sharply in response. And China's consumption appetite, the greatest impact on the commodity markets, comes from China, India, and the rest of Asia, where the majority of the world's masses now reside. China now consumes 27% of the world's steel, 55% of the world's cement, 25% of the world's aluminum. It has become the second largest importer of oil in the world, right behind the United States. China has to increasingly import more of its food, over 3% last year, and the amount is growing. China's once massive stockpiles of wheat and corn have been steadily falling, and since 2000, China has been a net importer of wheat. An increasing number of affluent Chinese are now consuming more beef, wheat, and vegetable oil. And as affluence increases, so does the demand for a better diet. The taste palates of the Chinese consumer are being felt in agricultural markets around the world, and soybean prices are up 80% during the last year alone. And some say that China's voracious appetite for commodities will soon cool down. Others are not as sanguine about price relief coming from China. The sheer size of China's population and the removal of arable land due to urbanization suggested that China's demand for agricultural commodities is here to stay. Jim Rogers, in his This Week's Financial Sense News Hour's guest, who just recently returned from China, believes that China's economy could indeed cool down as a result of government efforts to slow it down. Rogers believes that the slowdown could end as a hard landing instead of a soft one. And Rogers points that the governments have very seldom delivered on soft landings in the economy. Hard landings are the historical precedent. However, Rogers believes that any downturn in commodities that results from a slowdown in China's economy will only be brief. To Rogers' way of thinking, the bull market in commodities will last well beyond this decade, only to be punctuated periodically by occasional pullbacks. There's no stopping China now. It's simply too big. China will continue to be an importer of energy and other raw materials as its economy industrializes and becomes the power center of global manufacturing. This will mean greater imports of everything from iron ore, copper, lead, and zinc to coal and oil. China's imports of food will also continue to grow and put pressure on the world's agricultural commodities like corn, wheat, and soybeans. Urbanization and industrialization are the main drivers of the Chinese economy. Its once verdant coastal plain has given way to a greater urbanization. Factories, high-rise buildings, and asphalt roads have replaced farmland. And like the United States, which must now import the majority of its energy and increasing amounts of raw materials, China is no longer self-sufficient in energy and raw materials. The impact on China's needs has been labeled the China syndrome. And on any given day, over one-fifth of the world's bulk freighters are unavailable for delivery, and many of these ships stand idle off the Chinese ports, waiting for as long as 3 weeks to unload. And as a result of China's voracious appetite for commodities, bulk freight costs have more than doubled over the past year. Shipyards now in Japan and Korea have orders well into the year 2007. And last year's orders for new ships more than doubled to 1,600 new ships. What's all this mean? What does it mean for your retirement? What does it mean for your pension? What does it mean for your future over the next 10, 20, 30 years, boys and girls? Well, I'm afraid that Reader's Digest and the mainstream press hasn't got a clue. They keep telling you that the economy is booming and everything is fine. Stand by. There's more to come. Next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're out of time. We've got to leave it right there, but we'll be back with more on your pension. Is it safe? Next time when we come back on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, which is heard here in the United States 7 days a week and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and the Law School, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archive. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, we're out of time for this session. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, with more. So thanks for listening, and until then, good night, friends.